In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey guys, so just so you know, today's episode is a little bit different than previous episodes that we've had. It gets like a little more contentious. We have definitely a little bit of a stronger debate about dating apps and their flaws and their merits. And you're about to hear our interview with Nancy Drew Sales, who made the documentary Swiped, Hooking Up in the Digital Age, which you can watch on HBO. And she definitely has a sort of different view about dating apps than we do. And it definitely becomes an interesting, slightly contentious debate. But we hope you guys enjoyed it. We want to have different kinds of people on the podcast with different views and not just our own. So she definitely challenged our views. And you might agree with it, you might not. If you have any thoughts on it, definitely email us, UUP@betches.com. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, just let us know. And enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the UUP podcast. I'm Jared Freed.
And I'm Jordana Abraham, and we are here with Nancy Drew Sales.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
You look apprehensive about coming on here. I'm not going to lie.
No, I'm not.
You're not?
No.
Okay.
I'm not.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you?
No, I feel pretty great about having you. I love the documentary. I like what you're talking about. We're talking about online dating and then what's going on today. I just want to, you know, we wanted to talk to you because this is what this podcast is all about.
Right. So you saw the documentary.
Yeah.
Which is called?
It is called Swiped. Looking Up in the Digital Age.
On HBO.
On HBO.
All HBO platforms.
And you can watch it on all HBO platforms. It's fantastic. All of you listening should go watch it. It's a great perspective. And it's a great thought out. And it's, you know what I would compare it to? It's like you're reporting live from the epicenter of dating.
Yeah.
If an alien came to Earth,
yeah,
and they were like, what's happening to single people? They could watch this, and it's Nancy Drew Sales letting them know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it's so great. It takes a great picture of a place and time. And it's what we talk about a lot on this show.
Exactly.
Where it's, listen, you know, a lot of times, this is the reality. You know, this is what's going on.
This is the new age of dating.
This is the new age of dating, right. And we have to be better daters to deal with it.
Well, may I respond to that in terms of my research and what we're trying to get?
Also, for the listeners at home, Nancy Drew is a best-selling author. Her piece called Tinder and the Dating and the Dawn of the Dating Apocalypse. It was on Vanity Fair and has been read by millions of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, a best-selling author. And you've directed and produced the movie, and it's amazing. And please take the time.
Check it out.
Go on HBO Go or go on HBO, you know, whatever, and check it out because we searched you out to bring you on the show.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is exciting for us. So please respond.
All right. Well, when you say that this is just the way it is, this is the reality we have to deal with, this is dating today. On the one hand, you're right, and that is the part of my documentary that reflects that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I would one of the things that I came to understand more through research and doing the film was that this is not a fait accompli. Number one, this doesn't.
What do you mean by that? I speak English.
I mean, the way things are don't have to be the way things are. If you don't like them and they make you unhappy or unsatisfied in some way, number one. And number two, why are things the way they are? How did we get here? And what I started to do through my work and research was to look at the companies behind this and the ways in which we are all consumers and customers and users of technology, of what they call social products, and a very kind of new technology, actually, which has been conceived and designed with young people in mind. This is what the heads of several dating apps told me for the documentary, as you saw, when I went to Tinder and Bumble and Hinge and said, you know, why did you make these products? I thought it was very telling that Jonathan Bedeen, who's the CSO of Tinder, who invented the swipe, said, we were looking for disruption in the marketplace.
Mm.
So it was a business decision. He did not say, we were looking for ways to, as their marketing often says, and this is maybe what I was expecting him to say in a way, he did not say, we were looking, we wanted people to connect and have wonderful relationships,
yeah,
and fall in love and get married or even have a night of great sex. He didn't say that. What he said was it was a business decision. They were looking for disruption in the marketplace, and particularly in a marketplace where there was a still at this point, even with Grindr, which was mostly in the gay community, yep, so you know, there was still a stigma attached to online dating.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it was still seen as something for people who, as Justin McLeod says in my documentary, mm-hmm, people who were a little bit desperate.
Right.
And yeah, and for old people, yeah, frankly. Because
mm-hmm, you look
I
at like...
I think that, yeah.
So they disrupted this marketplace.
Right. Like 5 years ago, even, I would say, or yeah, 7 years ago for sure, I think before the apps came out, it was seen as sort of like a desperate move a little bit.
There was an eye roll, mm-hmm, and yeah, absolutely.
And there was a lot of work that went into online dating. There were a lot of on Match.com and other major companies that had most of the users and the traffic at that point. You know, let's say pre 2012. There's
sure
a lot of work involved. There was a lot of OkCupid was already there, but they hadn't gone mobile yet.
But eHarmony, you had the 80 question survey, and
exactly,
and JDate, you'd have to fill out a whole thing and then pay for it to even speak to someone.
It was considered a lengthy process that was expensive, and also you were kind of a loser maybe a
sure
little bit,
right,
if you
okay
did this. Okay. So these tech people, these people of big tech, big dating, as
yep
I like to call it.
Big dating.
It is okay definitely big dating at this yeah point, because we have a multi-billion dollar industry of mobile dating apps that has gone worldwide.
But yep hasn't yeah sex and dating always been like a what sells, as they say, or been a multi-million dollar industry?
Well, we're not really talking about sex. We're talking about a corporation that decided to make certain products. Sex is, of course, there. They decided that they were going to approach a certain demographic, which was millennials, which they said very openly in my
yep
film.
Mm-hmm.
Whitney Wolf Heard, one of the early people at Tinder,
and now she's
the founder of Bumble, and personally now worth $250 million. So we know that these apps are very rewarding.
Yeah.
The strategy that they've had has become very financially rewarding to everyone who's been mm-hmm behind it. So it was a way to make money. It was a way to disrupt the marketplace. And the target market was millennials. She openly says, we were going for, her words, the young, hip, millennial college market.
Yeah, because they gamified what the websites were before. They took it and turned it into a slot machine.
One click sign on through Facebook, make it as easy as possible. They assessed their potential user base and saw that these were young people who were growing up for the most part on their phones, glued to their screens,
mm-hmm,
doing now suddenly receiving everything through phones.
Yeah.
Information, communication,
sure,
news, products.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So why not a soulmate? Or just a person to have a fun night with. Why not that?
I agree with everything you're saying. But wouldn't you say that any progression has because someone wanted to make money to progress? You know, like, wouldn't you say that, like, they have a right to make money. They have a right to gamify something.
Everything I just said was descriptive.
Yeah.
And, you know, and what I'm trying to establish here
okay
is that we cannot look at this as something that just kind of happened and it's just there and we just have to deal with it. Well, no. I mean, that's the part that's not true. It didn't just happen. It's not just there as if it grew out of the ground like an orange tree. And we don't have to deal with it. We don't have to accept it and the culture of dating if we don't want to.
Cool.
But not. This is not to judge any person who uses online dating
for sure
in any possible way. But this is what people in the big dating industry, and in fact, all of Silicon Valley, this is how they justify their products and their enormous impact on users, is to say, well, it was already there. It would have happened anyway. Like, it's just like normal. It's just natural. And yet at the same time, they want us to believe that they have made life so much better and so much faster and so much quicker and so much easier and so much more convenient. This is the hallmark of how Silicon Valley markets products. And we also have to think, and I think it came out in the documentary, and I think it's important for everyone, especially anyone who's not a white male, to think about when they're using these products, is that these products have been almost exclusively conceived, designed, and marketed by white males.
So
by heterosexual white males.
Right. So what do you think is the biggest detriment to using a dating app, or why do you think that, or do you feel like there it's a negative impact on society, and if so, why are we worse off now?
I think that we just have to look at how we use them, how they were designed, what they're made for, what happens with them, because getting back to, and this all becomes, in answer to your question, this all becomes very important in considering who made them and why, because you could say, well, this just was going to happen anyway, but not really, because when the company designed the app, what was their idea behind it? To get you coming back to use it more, because how do they make money from use? Any kind of app, any kind of website or technology is how they achieve value is through usage. It's value of use. So the more users, the more swiping, the more messaging, the more your time and attention, and you know, we could also say hopes and dreams, lusts and desires, you know, fantasies and whatever are involved with their product, the more valuable it becomes. So how did they achieve that? How did they figure out, well, how can we get these people coming back for more? And how can we, well, they do it in all kinds of ways, not just Tinder, but every single app of every single sort, whether it's dating or whatever.
Social media, Instagram, Facebook, anything on your phone.
They
I mean, I'm checking the Delta app 3 times a day for some reason. I don't know why I do that.
Because probably Delta, like Tinder, has
some intermittent rewards.
Well, it has this like thing that has this graph on it that shows you your sky miles. Even on days I don't fly, I go check it just because I like seeing the little graph. You know, it's like a lottery, you know, a slot machine.
Exactly. We all do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because they use principles of psychology and social conditioning. And we know this is not a conspiracy theory. Again, Jonathan Bedeen, inventor of the swipe, very openly talks in my movie Swiped about how he based the swipe, and he had never spoken about this in an interview before, on the social conditioning principle of the variable ratio schedule, which he said he learned about in psych courses and business courses in college, where you are motivated to go forward and continue engaging with a product because, like in gambling, because you don't know when you will be rewarded.
It's very game theory-ish.
Right. Yeah. Do you remember in the film, the experiment with the pigeons?
I don't remember.
Okay. B.F. Skinner. Right. B.F. Skinner, who's a psychologist in, you know, the 20th century. He died in 1990, I think. Not sure. Anyway, very, very controversial, very famous psychology, whose ideas and principles have been used a lot in Silicon Valley, not just by Tinder.
Right.
And that's a big subject, like, among tech nerds and stuff too, and, you know, pieces like on Wired about B.F. Skinner's effect on, you know, influence on social media. And so he did this famous experiment in the 1970s where he turned pigeons into gamblers. He had all these cages with pigeons, and he taught them to peck on a little light to get food. And sometimes they would get the food and sometimes they wouldn't. And the pigeons who didn't know when they were going to get the food would peck more and more and more and more, more, just because it was fun to play the game and just because they, whether or not they were hungry.
Yeah.
So
don't you think
this principle applied to Tinder is the swipe.
But don't you think?
And you're swiping.
Right. And sometimes you get a match and sometimes you don't. So it makes you come back.
And we don't want to think that this affects us. We don't want to think that, I mean, what we would prefer to think, I think, is, you know, it's just, I think it's human to think, but that's not really affecting me. That's not affecting my you know, the way that I engage with people, the way that I think about dating, that's not affecting me. I'm not really addicted to swiping, you know. But then you have these surveys that say that, you know, and if you want to believe studies and surveys that say that, like, people are really addicted to dating apps, whether swiping apps and other types of apps as well. And they're on them sometimes 10 hours a week, hours a day.
Absolutely.
While and we're also on Instagram, though, aren't we?
While they're on the toilet. Yeah. You know, like that's.
And now,
like,
the two things are combined.
That's true.
Yeah.
They're combined. So then you, like, have a twofer where you're not only looking at, you're not only drawn in by the design of one app, but then by another. And it sends you down the rabbit hole of, like, oh, this person and oh, that person. And so then we get to the final thing I wanted to say about all this is. Then we get to the issue of the multiplicity of options and how that, you know, affects us on a psychological level as well when it comes to sex and dating and love and our you know, who we are, really.
Yeah.
I don't think dating is a frivolous subject. I think it's a very serious subject because it involves not only the structure of our society in certain ways, but also how we feel every day. How, you know, the people we come in contact in a romantic or sexual context have a really huge influence on our mental health and our sense of self-esteem and all of these things. So it's a very, very, very serious thing. So what all of this access has seemed to have done and what all of this, you know, availability of options seems to have done, and we have people talking about it in the film as well, you know, young people that I interviewed about their dating app use, is that it has made it harder to choose one.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, when you say, many times when I'm interviewed about the subject matter, and I understand where you're coming from, because you want to know, you want to cut to the chase. So what do you think about this? Good, bad, what?
Right.
But we tend in our society to think in very binary ways. Is this good? Is this bad? Is this black? Is this white? Am I going to die? Am I going to live? But actually, I see it as a much more complicated and complex thing, where certainly there are some good things and there are some bad things. There are some really horrific things, like the rise in sexual violence related to online dating, which is undeniable and has been charted in studies as well, and it isn't being talked about at all. And how these dating, and you saw it in my film when we had a young woman who was cyberbullied from a dating app date. He created a website in which he said she was a crackhead.
Yeah.
The dating app had not one thing to say to help her except call the police.
What's their responsibility, you think, the dating apps?
Well, I think, just to finish the thought, I think there's some things that are bad to the point of horrific, like rape and harassment and cyberbullying and all these things. And then there are things that are good. You know, of course there are things that are good. But what, you know, like, a new kind of intimacy that's sometimes really thrilling and exciting and fun. But I think overall, what we cannot do, because I think it would be such a mistake to do that, is to say that it's not changing us and to say that it's not deeply affecting us, sometimes on a daily basis.
I think you came to the right place for that conversation, because that's kind of why we have this podcast. When I say it's the reality, I understand where you're like, what you're saying with, we don't have to say that it's a good reality. We can say this is just, we're changing as ourselves because we're interacting with each other in different ways.
We don't have to accept it.
Well, you have to know, you have to be realistic that this is out there.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, Facebook isn't going back in the toothpaste.
But normalizing things, I think, is a real problem with technology. Technology tends, the new kind of shiny, addictive, sexy technology that we've all, you know, you guys have, you know, grown up with more than I have, but I'm certainly addicted to many social media platforms as well. It, you know, like I said, it sees us as its mark. It wants us to be engaged with it, you know, and so I don't see that as, it would take, it's conditioning, and it would take a lot of, I think, conversation to change that. But I think that's a conversation we need to have, because I don't want to be controlled by corporate forces. I don't want to be controlled by you know, somebody's bottom line. I want to have real agency in my life in terms of my love, sex, and dating choices. And I don't think that when you're on these apps, you completely have that. Whether you're a man, woman, identify in other ways, whether...
I can agree with that in the sense that you're what you're saying is like there's a corporation behind what you're doing. There's someone who has intentions that are not necessarily in line with yours. There's someone who's standing to make money off of you going through this, you know, mental perhaps alteration or addiction to your phone or addiction to swiping. But couldn't you say that also about like Jared was saying before about a lot of other things like alcohol and dating probably causes a lot of violence, causes a lot of... you know, issues or mind alterations or things like that. Like
alcohol is also an addiction that's very wrapped up in hookup culture meets dating apps. I mean, we know that hookup culture was already, which existed, you know, before dating apps ever came along. Dating apps, I feel, have really weaponized hookup culture, but we always knew that there were several addictions going on at the same time in hookup culture very often that did lead to a lot of blurring of lines, unfortunately, of consent and, you know, moments when people really didn't know what they had done or why. And aside from the whole terrible issue of rape and sexual violence, there's also just like knowing exactly why you're doing something and what how you feel about it in the moment. I mean, these are all things that have been written about for 20 years mm-hmm. by academics who study hookup culture. So dating apps come along and they, like I say, kind of weaponize all that and put it in overdrive. And so I think there's a lot of addictions going on at the same time. There's addiction to the dating app. There's addiction to often alcohol. Our society is riddled with addictions. I don't know that this is the healthiest environment in which we engage with each other, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, like to the point about alcohol, like no one is asking, you know, if a place makes if Smirnoff makes a cotton candy flavored vodka that tastes just like cotton candy, do we go to them and say it's their responsibility to teach the public about how these don't taste like alcohol anymore?
Well, let's talk about cigarettes.
Sure.
I mean, what happened with cigarettes, you know? The cigarette companies knew that they had that their products were dangerous.
Yeah.
That their products were lethal, in fact, mm-hmm. in certain doses. And yet they hid this research for decades. There's a really famous article in Vanity Fair, actually, the magazine I work for, which exposed how, and became a movie called The Insider, which exposed how the cigarette companies hid all of this from the public for a long time.
Do you feel that the dating apps are hiding us to a certain extent?
It's the new big tobacco.
They marketed to... You could draw that inference. I'm just saying that there is some historical basis for this in terms of how companies have a track record. Big companies have a track record of not necessarily having the health and well-being of their customers, their clients, their users uppermost in their mind. Uppermost in their mind is their bottom line. So cigarette companies were also very normalized. Cigarette companies ran. I mean, we've all seen Mad Men. They ran ads using doctors.
But as you
doctors learn, would say, I smoke this brand. Similarly, also my mom, who's an older lady, said that in her high school they had cigarette machines in the cafeteria.
Yeah, but then people learned more and were given more knowledge.
They learned why.
And now people make a rational decision between smoking and
regulated.
Not smoking.
She's saying they learned because they're regulated.
They were forced to. They were forced to. Become regulated because it became impossible to deny the deleterious effects of alcohol, of cigarettes and tobacco on people. But they didn't offer up this information. They didn't want to protect people. They had to.
What would the protections you would want from the dating apps?
Like cigarettes, yeah, like a carton of cigarettes has a thing on it that says this is going to essentially
it's not only that. There's been an enormous change in how, this is what I'm saying, like it doesn't have to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. That's a normalizing view of corporate effects on society. It doesn't have to be the way it is for any reason, especially when it's only been around for a few years.
But
especially
no one's forcing anyone to be on a dating app.
Nobody forced anybody to smoke cigarettes. But we've had enormous campaigns about what cigarettes do to you, it's become socially pretty much unacceptable in a very short amount of time. I mean, when I was your age in New York City, everybody smoked. I smoked. You know, I now look back on it and think, like, what was I doing?
Yeah.
I would like to live a long life. That just time that I smoked shortened my life. But probably. But you watch Sex and the City. Carrie Bradshaw always has a cigarette in her hand up into the 2000s. Now, that's not the case. And the reason I'm bringing this up is this whole idea of accepting things just because, or seeing things as the way they are just because everybody's doing it or because this corporation is making this product available to you and you're addicted.
Yeah. I mean, I see it differently as far as the normalization part. Like, you use your phone every day. You use Facebook, Instagram. You know that these aren't positive parts of your life. I know I can trust people out there to say that there are adults out there to go, well, I'm on Facebook too much. I'm on Instagram too much. It can be, we know these things aren't helping us in any way.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been to therapy for many years, and one of the benefits of having been to therapy is that I've learned to get to know myself better. And so I know just how much social interaction I can take before I need to revert back into my shell. So it's really helped me optimize the time that I have out and socializing with friends, and also helped me like know when it's time to just go home and be on my own. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/UUP today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/UUP.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's JUVEDERM.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you are allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
There was recently an article, like just in the last week, in the New York Times about how, and this has come up before in articles, and I know well from the work that I do, because I also wrote a book about teenage girls and how they're affected by social media and how they use social media, called American Girls. Anyway, so there was just an article in the New York Times, like in the last week, that was about how the parents of kids in Silicon Valley, the parents of big tech, they don't allow their kids to have screens.
Yeah,
they don't want them to be on screens.
Well, and in fact, Bill Gates with the tape over his camera.
Well, they don't give they don't give their children these products.
Sure.
And also, this particular article was about how nannies in Silicon Valley are being schooled to not use phones. They can't use their phones around kids. Mm. They can't let the kids go on phones.
Yeah.
They can't have any kind of screens. No iPads. Nothing. And
but I would
Steve
say
Jobs famously told Nick Bilton, the tech writer who's in my movie Swiped. He's a really great, journalist who writes about tech. He, in an article, this came up, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, Steve Jobs famously told Nick Bilton he wasn't going to let his kids have an iPad when they were first coming out. Maybe it was longer than that, 15 years ago, maybe. And Nick said, why? Why? Aren't these for kids? Mm-hmm. Aren't all kids going to be playing games on them and watching media on them? But not his kids. Because he knew. And because, as this article stated, they know that it's not just that you're going to be on it all the time and using it all the time. It will change you. It will change your brain.
Yeah.
It will change how you think. It will change your attention span. It will change how you live in the world moment to moment, how you perceive your experiences. It's a huge thing. It will change if you're a 10 or 13 year old girl and you're or boy and you're just always thinking about what do I post? How many likes will I get?
Yeah.
How many followers do I have? That changes your perception of reality moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask you, having said that, I'm just asking people to think about how it changes your perception of potential dating partners, people you might love or have sex with, to see them in a stack of swipes that you endlessly push their face and push their face, another product to be hot or knotted, you know, because this is the basic mentality of it.
What would your advice be to someone who's a single person? They're 25, they're out there, maybe they don't want to get off the couch every night and go on dates and go to bars and go to function. What would you say they should do?
Or they're in a new city, they don't want to go out alone.
Yeah.
Well, I think that right there, you have another reason why we need to have a broader, deeper, bigger conversation. Not that maybe you're having here. I love your podcast. I'm just saying that sometimes I think it needs to, not the podcast, but these conversations need to get a little more real about what it is that we're actually doing here instead of just using it because it is so easy.
Mm.
You don't have to get dressed up.
Yeah.
You don't have to even have a real conversation with someone. You don't even have to be yourself or put your real picture on there because lots of people
don't
put a picture of, like, I don't know. I'm doing a book now on this same subject. It's coming out in 2020 on online dating. And so I was on Tinder the other night and I was swiping. And I hadn't been on it in a while because I had finished my film and we went on it a lot during the film.
Are you yourself single?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I went on it to see, like, is it still the same? Are things the same, or, you know, as they were 6 months ago, you know, when we were looking at it for the film? And I would say that with a 6 month hiatus, what I noticed, which was chilling to me, was how much, even in a very short amount of time, how much better the pictures have gotten. Like more professional, more posed.
More face-tuned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I was on men and women.
Right.
More like a product. Mm. Like thought went into this. It's not just like, hey, here are my homies at the restaurant.
Right.
You know?
It was very interesting.
They were posed and everything in my film that one psychologist talks about was still there. It's like, this doesn't go away because we are in some way programmed for this kind of stuff. There were fish pics and there were mountain pics and there was, you know, the guys standing by their car, touching their car, holding their mirror selfie,
shirtless.
right. That's all still there. But it was so much more profesh.
Yeah.
Like, it just looked like...
Curated, almost.
Curated.
Yeah.
There's the word.
Yeah.
Curated. And then the more pictures. And they all, you know, and there's like this certain look. You know, what's wrong with that, to me, is making yourself more of a product, thinking of more of yourself as something to be consumed. You need to get attention in this, like, flick of the, you know.
You got to find a way to rise up.
Grab someone's attention.
Right. And it's more like this whole, also fame culture weirdly comes into it, you know, because we're all trying to do, you know, celebrities often, going back to, you know, the, like, beautiful photographs that hang in the hallways in Vanity Fair, my magazine I work for, like, that were done by, like, Harrell and those great, you know, all those great photographers who took pictures of celebrities back in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, is this, like, it's a very celebrity culture, celebrity curation type shot where the person just looks very deep.
Mm.
They look very deep, you know? They're staring off into the distance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that I saw on Tinder. A lot of that, like,
artsy.
Well, they could be even just, like, doing whatever, but it's like that sort of, like, celebrity, like, you know, what does Tyra call it?
Smizing.
No, it's not smizing. It's more like a kind of, I don't know. But there was a smize. There was smizing too.
A lot of smizing.
Right.
But wouldn't you say that's you hear, like, it's like when people say they don't want a casino coming to town because crime will go up. And you're like, yeah, if you move 100,000 people into town that had not that many people in town, all those statistics are going to go up that are bad. You know, so a lot of the things you're saying where you say, you know, listen, I'm not saying, I do agree, the weaponization of dating, yes, it happens faster, it happens quicker. You're seeing more people than you'd ever meet in maybe your entire life in 1 year before these existed.
But it's commodification. I'm trying to get with that whole profile picture digression. I'm trying to get us to think about commodification, which is another issue. There's sexualization. I think that, yeah, that happens too, you know, but there's commodification, which is equally disturbing, which is when you, and this is throughout social media,
mm-hmm,
and in the context of dating, it's, you know, it's something to think about, that you're commodifying yourself. You're making yourself into a product to be consumed from the jump.
Yeah.
And it's interesting you call it a casino game, because that's exactly what,
sure,
Adam Alter, the psychologist in my film, calls it. He's a gamification,
yeah,
expert, right, addiction expert. He wrote a book called Irresistible. And, you know, Jonathan Medin, again, called it, it's kind of like a slot machine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this isn't like one town it's come to. It's the world. It's, well, the entire world. It's Tinder's in 128 countries. There are dating apps in, I would say, probably almost every country. China has a huge dating app culture, from, right, Bombay to Beijing. The number one city for dating app, for Tinder in the world, is London. But it's not even New York.
Is there any iteration of the app? Have they gotten better to you? Like, there's been other apps that have been created with different rules. And different, like
Hinge redesigned its app because of my article. And this was openly, you know, I'm not saying that. Justin McLeod, who created the app, yeah, Hinge, after my piece, Tinder and the Dawn on the Dating Apocalypse, came out in 2015, he did a survey to say, well, wow, is this true? Is this happening on my app? Because they had swiping.
I know.
Is this what it's like? Are women really being harassed to this extent? Sure. Are some men being so cavalier about their hookups? Is this all going on? What?
Right.
You know? So he did this big survey, 80,000 people. And I would say that if you actually read that survey, download and read that survey, it like paints a bleaker picture of what my article reported. So he then, with his team, yeah, redesigned his app. And he reached out to me, actually, and said, I want you to know we're doing this. And it's because of you.
This is my point with you talk about, like.
But I didn't finish.
Oh,
which is to say, no, I'm sorry, long-winded answer. But you said, are there any things that are better? I think that there are CEOs with a sense of corporate responsibility, yeah, like McLeod, who look at this and say, like, I don't want it to be like this. I want to change it. How do I change it? Can I change it? They got rid of swiping. Hinge is a different platform now. But does that. And now, actually, after Swipes came out, he now added, he's not spoken to me about this. Okay. I just saw it in the news. But they've added a new feature, which is the first time on any dating app, mm-hmm, ever, where there's reporting about whether or not you actually had a relationship off
But
of
this is where I disagree that these, you know, all of a sudden, he's been on this podcast.
Right.
He's like, to be totally open, us both money to help promote the app. So I want to be, of course. But I'm saying,
well, now it's been, Hinge has also been purchased. It's been bought
by the Match Group.
So it's the same. But long story short, did it make it better? Did it make dating better? Is Hinge better? I don't know, because what you need in order to establish these things are studies, which he did himself with the swiping, and data. And we do not have data on enough data. There's not been enough time, number one, and there's not been enough effort, number two, to really gather data on what the effects of all of this are.
But I'm saying, sorry to interrupt, but the point that I'm saying is that he's motivated by money too. There's a market for better dating apps that aren't Tinder.
Exactly.
Right. So, which is totally fine.
I just reported what he said to me.
Totally. I'm not saying he doesn't have a soul.
If you want to infer,
but I'm saying
he's the devil.
No, he's a great guy actually.
I do like him.
And if you
want to infer that, I'm not going to argue with you, because
with the companies, when people are motivated by money, there's going to be another option available, because I told Justin that I think his app is in the driver's seat right now because women want those things, and men are going to go where the women go. So it's, you know, if Tinder's full of all men swiping fake bots, and all the women are on Hinge because it's more protected, because it's a more thoughtful dating app, because of the experience of the past, well, wouldn't you say we're progressing a little bit?
On the other hand, one of the reasons why I know through an industry source, McLeod did not tell me this. And again, I think he's a really great guy. He has great thing, really, really interesting things to say in the documentary that I did. And he's so honest about everything. And I appreciate that about him. But an industry source did tell me that Hinge got sold to Match because basically it had to. When you say it's in the driver's seat, that's not true in terms of, it might be like trends or buzz or something, but that's not true in terms of the bottom line of these companies and who's making money. Hinge is so outpaced by Tinder overall, and Tinder is so far ahead of every other dating app in terms of just how much money they make, how many users they have.
McDonald's outpaces Shake Shack.
Right. Well, that's also because they're first, right? Like you said, like there's a higher quality option in the market, which maybe has an appeal to it to a certain kind of person that wants that higher quality.
Look, option. McLeod's research says, and other studies that have been done say, and my anecdotal research as well agrees that people want relationships. Right. They do. All kinds of people want relationships. Yeah. 80 something percent of people, when they go on these apps, this is what they want. Okay. No, wait. But the question is, this is what people want.
Yeah.
Products are made, hopefully, to serve people what they want. This is what they want. But is this what they are getting?
I mean, that's why new apps are created.
The data doesn't exist on it.
What do you say?
There's no data on whether it exists. And this is an important point, because if that's what they want, are they getting it on these apps that kind of sort of promise them that they could potentially get it there?
There's a lot of relationships based off of swiping apps, too, that I've met. Like, have you not encountered several? I mean, like.
But that's not data. You know, when I went to Tinder, and I really tried to hone in on this point with them and say, because Sean Rad, co-founder of Tinder, he says in interviews, you know, we are inundated with emails. This is in the documentary. People get married off Tinder. And then I go to Tinder, and Sean Rad is unavailable to talk. But they give me to Jonathan Bedin, and they give me to this woman who worked there called Jessica Carbino, who's the sociologist at Tinder. So I'm talking to her about it, and she says to me, I said, well, how many, you know, people, your own research says that, Tinder's own research says people want relationships. So how many people get that? If 80-something percent want, how many get? And she says, well, there's no data. The data on that is not available. And what does she say? But we're inundated with emails from people who get married. Right. So all I'm saying is, and then she says, and look at the New York Times. In the valid section of New York Times, there have been, this was in 2016, 23 marriages off of Tinder. So do you understand how anecdotally, of course, we all know that person who met someone on Match or Plenty of Fish or whatever. You know, we've all been to that wedding. But that's not data.
Right.
Yeah. That's like, there's a word for this in psychology. I forget what it is, but it's like when you want to believe something, the one example of it becomes enough for you.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anecdotal evidence isn't evidence. I see what you're saying with that. But what do you say about the fact that 60% of current marriages worldwide are actually arranged marriages? Wouldn't you say this is an improvement on that? Like the fact that, and I just actually was just reading a book which told me that statistic. So wouldn't you say like that for a lot of women around the globe, this is like a much better option than just being put into like a financial match with someone who they might not even like, and that's just the norm for them? Isn't this an improvement on that? Isn't this somewhat of an elevation?
If you read my article, Tinder and the Dawn of the Dating Apocalypse, or if you see my movie Swiped, you will see very, very quickly and clearly that I come at all of this from a feminist perspective. And my perspective on this is about, comes from, I've sort of like hoped that I've brought to the conversation on this an awareness and a realization that these apps are designed by straight white guys in a bro culture that's, you know, widely reported to be sexist of Silicon Valley. They're conceived and designed. The dating world has been reconceived, reconfigured by young straight white guys who don't think about the consequences. So my view on all of this in terms of how these apps play into, sometimes I think, really instruments of rape culture, how they play into sexualization and commodification of women and men, but especially women, let's face it, is from a feminist perspective. So I am completely on the side of women, not only women, but marginalized people or people of color who told us that in using dating apps, they encountered racism. Something is not talked about enough. The normalization of racism.
Isn't that also anecdotal, though? Or is there actual
no,
data behind that?
No, there's been a lot written about it. I would never want to, you know, tell a person of color, like, oh, well, that's just your experience. That can't be happening across the board. I mean,
I'm just saying, like, in terms of the other side of things, in terms of, like, that's just your experience that you met your boyfriend on Tinder. Isn't that sort of the same, like, in just the sense of, there's like terrible anecdotes in both directions of like good and bad things.
So you don't believe that there's racism?
No,
on dating
of course
apps?
I believe that there is. I'm just saying, like, in the same sense that we want actual hard statistics and facts about, you know, like the actual successes. We also would like them about the negative aspects.
I'm not
as well,
the only
no?
person to have reported on this or to have given hope to have given. People have experienced this, a voice on this in my film. In fact, when the young people in my film are talking about this in a little town in Plainfield, Illinois, we went to a big city, medium-sized city, college campus, and a little tiny town in Illinois. We show on the screen, you know, in B-roll, like, an article about it. There, mm-hmm. This is not something that has only been reported by me or by the characters in my film. This is something that I think is a problem since my film came out. I've heard from a lot of women of color who've really appreciated the fact that there was that representation in the film, because it's not talked about enough, and it needs to be talked about, is the way in which these dating apps seem to normalize certain, you know, biases that people have towards people who are not the same race.
Well, I mean, that's... No, I'm not lessening that experience. I don't think Jordana's lessening that experience of someone having that, have awful things happen, of course.
And they see things, they say, but no, but this is a quote. This is a quote from someone in the film said that they see on the profile, it will say no blacks. I talked to actually Justin McLeod about this, and he said, oh, wow, that could never happen on our app. We would kick them off immediately. Who knows if that is true or not, but obviously, that's not something that any person of color should see.
Of course,
on
not.
An app.
But wouldn't you say that people are going to a bar, so to speak, with that attitude and not writing it on an app?
Like, I'm sorry.
If someone's willing to write that on an app, like
right.
something hateful,
that,
but
like
turn
that.
The question around: are they only willing to say it because they are on an app?
Well, I'm just saying, are we put face to face with the reality of getting swiped right and swiped left right to our faces? You know, this I'm saying.
Are you justifying that?
I'm not justifying it at all. All I'm saying is that these
He's
people
just saying that
exist.
Brings that brings to light someone who already exists with those attitudes. That person's going to exist whether or not they can
whether
show,
there's an app or
they
not.
Can
but
show
they
it on
should
an app
not,
or not
be.
An app.
You should not. It's a public space. Dating apps are a public space. As much as you would like to think, perhaps when you use them, that they're private, they're not. They're a public space. And, you know, this was one of the reasons, actually, why, for the film, we were legally permitted to show actual people from the apps.
Sure.
If we wanted to. Because it is considered a public space.
Right.
So this is a public space. We have to have, this is what I'm talking about a breakdown of social mores, conventions, and social contracts that are not acceptable in public. It's not acceptable. If someone came this the analogy that you're making, what you're suggesting, I think, is that someone might already think that in a bar, but if a woman of color went up to that person, if that person said to her, no blacks,
oh,
that would
be
completely
awful.
Unacceptable,
yeah.
But it's acceptable on a dating app. Why?
I mean, you're saying that it's so widespread that it's acceptable.
It's normalized. I should have said, instead of acceptable, it's normalized.
Like they're not, no one's getting kicked off the app for writing no Hispanic people, no Jews. Are people being kicked off for that or not?
I have heard about it enough, and it's been written about enough that I think probably not enough people are being kicked off of it, okay. off of these apps. It's not in their interest.
But I'm saying, you know, that's when we're talking about, like, you know, the successes of it, and then saying, well, that's, where are the numbers? You know, the horrible things that are happening, these are horrible things,
why isn't it, while I'm sitting here,
sure,
and I have this research and information to share, why shouldn't we talk about it?
Isn't that something
that we should talk about?
I think you talk about the good and the bad in any situation to let people make their own rational decisions.
Right.
Yeah. So I agree with what you're saying. Like, it's,
there's no,
I've
per,
never,
there's
I've
no,
never come across no Jews on a dating.
There's app. No person of color in this room right now.
No,
but
I know.
If there were, I would like to know what he, she, they has to say about this, because I'm not so sure that they would also feel that it was, like, not a big deal.
I don't think anyone said it's not a big deal at all. I mean, Ronnie Chang is a good friend of mine on The Daily Show. He did a whole piece about how Asian men are just not liked on dating apps.
Right.
And
well,
it's a very interesting piece because you watch it from his perspective and through his eyes. And it's, and you never think of it that way. And so I,
right.
And that's, so when you're saying that, like,
there are,
you know, people of color,
racial, right? There are definitely, like, there are studies of, like, who gets more of this, who gets more of that. And it's really kind of chilling and troubling to see. First of all, let's talk about women. Who gets the most? Who gets the most swipe rights in terms of women?
I would assume
18-year-old women.
Younger women, yeah.
Yes.
Very young women. But the youngest that are allowed on the app.
On that topic, how do you feel about Bumble? And because that was kind of dubbed as the feminist dating app. As marketing wise,
well,
and I've been on this. I mean, I've said a bunch of times how I was like, that one's built for men in my eyes, like, because you have a woman saying,
"Thank
you." Have a woman, I've said it a bunch of times where it's you have a woman who says, "I think you're hot," and then she's going, "Ooh me, ooh me," which is, that's what it is.
Well,
and that's,
let's
hard
talk
to truth.
About that for a second.
So,
because
but that's run
what
by
is
a
that,
woman.
But what does that tell you if it doesn't really seem like real feminism to you? And nor does it to,
it's about money.
Nor does it to me. And there's a feminist dating historian in my film who talks about it. It doesn't seem like it to her. Then how come it's marketed that way? And how come Whitney Wolf Heard is written about in the New York Times as the, you know, as the cool gal with the feminist dating app and everything? Because it's marketing. Because it's marketing.
Right.
Because people who approach places like the New York Times to pitch stories are very good at pitching their stories. And it's like, they want to hear that something is feminist because that's hot. That's new. That's cool.
Sure.
That's, oh, wow, the trend. Ooh, it's the feminist dating app. So it's been marketed that way. It's been marketed that way in a very effective way. And, you know, it's marketing. Is it true? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think that what the feminist historian in our film says is that, to her, it just codifies that women have to do more work in relationships. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because
I agree with that. I think I remember being on Bumble and just feeling like that man could just like as Jared said, just got to just kind of like review all the people that were interested in him and just pick one.
It made it easier.
Several.
Yeah.
Right.
It makes it easier.
Yeah.
It makes it even easier for men to, in the power balance and the, you know, the power dynamic that dating always is.
Yeah.
It, I think, tips the scale towards men on the app.
Yeah, you're given a thought in a woman's head.
Right. Also, I know that a lot of young women see Bumble as more like the dating app, the dating app. Like, we're gonna have an actual date here. This is what is more of the expectation, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there's not one dating app. There's not just Bumble. It's not like the guy that you meet on Bumble isn't also
on a lot of other apps.
Or, yeah.
So you might be the person that they also see as the person to date.
Right.
Go out for wine with whatever. But then there's all these multiple options for other types of relationships and scenarios that could be happening simultaneously, sometimes even during the date when you're in the bathroom. Because there is
Yeah, people keep swiping all the time. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on. We're actually, I think
We're running on it. This is so interesting.
Thank you so much. This was like very, very interesting. Yeah. Everyone should definitely watch Swiped. It's on HBO, HBO On Demand, HBO Go, HBO Now, everywhere. And definitely check out Nancy Drew's articles on in Vanity Fair. She has some amazing ones. They've been read by millions of people.
Tinder and the dawn of the dating apocalypse. You're gonna go. Don't read it on Sunday. You'll be a little anxious.
Dating apocalypse was a quote from a young woman describing the landscape of dating today. It was a quote. It's a little extreme. I wouldn't call it.
At moments, it can feel like that. I could agree with that in some moments.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know
what my you know, parting shot. Who are we when we use dating apps? How do we feel about each other? How is it changing how we relate to each other? And how is it affecting our sense of well-being, self-esteem, and ability to form lasting relationships? Because that's what we want.
How do you date? Do you use these apps personally?
You're going to have to read my book.
I'm going to have to read the book.
You have to read the book.
2020.
Look out for it. Untitled.
Nancy Joe Sales Finds Love. I think I know the name.
There you go.
Thank you so much for coming on. Everyone go follow and support and Swiped, Hooking Up in the Digital Age, HBO.
We'll be right back. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with code PODCAST15.
It feels like I've tried every trick in the book to get better sleep. Cutting out late night snacks, no TikTok before bed. But let's be real, I'm going to keep scrolling. What did elevate my bedtime routine? Upgrading my bedding to Bowl and Branch. And right now you can take 20% off their selection of buttery soft sheets, airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and so much more. Upgrade your bedding now and thank me later. I have the Bowl and Branch sheets. Other than being beautiful, they are so comfortable. They're hotel quality. You're going to sleep better. And here's the trick. Take your Bowl and Branch sheets, put them in the wash, then make the bed and get directly into that hot bed. You're going to have the best sleep of your life. Made from the rarest 100% organic cotton and completely free from toxins, it's easy to see why Bowl and Branch are loved by millions of sleepers. These best-selling sheets feel incredible on night one and get softer and softer for years to come. Bowl and Branch signature sheets come in 14 versatile colors in all sizes, from twin up to California King, and they offer a 30-night worry-free guarantee, so you can wash, style, and sleep in their sheets for an entire month. If you don't love them, you can send them right back. Sleep better with the softest, most breathable bedding from Bowl and Branch. Get 15% off your order when you use promo code UUP at bowlandbranch.com. That's Bowl and Branch, bowlandbranch.com. Promo code UUP. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
That was a very interesting conversation with Nancy Joe Sales. What did you think, Jordana?
I think we definitely got into the meat of some very interesting topics.
I think Nancy Joe is doing a great service in explaining the side of the apps that we're not thinking about, the sales side, the mission of these companies is to make money, and I'm aware of that. I don't know if we think about that while we're searching for love on these sites.
I mean, I think about that when I, not only if I was on, I remember when being on dating apps, but walking into a clothing store. Sure. I mean, everyone wants you to make you feel a certain way so that they can make money off of you. That's just sort of advertising in general.
And we have to be adults and figure out ways to, you know, be aware of that and make our own decisions.
It's good
and
knowledge
try and be held. Good knowledge. I want to say to anyone, that's a different tone for this podcast. Yes. I enjoyed the conversation, Jordana.
I definitely enjoyed the conversation. It got a little contentious at times, but I think everyone has.
But everyone walked away shaking hands and smiling. So I want people to know there are subjects that we talked about in that interview that are tough subjects.
Right.
And you know, we don't feel comfortable talking about them because who are we? We don't know shit. She's done a bunch of research. And I hope everyone can listen to that. And
if you guys have any thoughts on it, you liked it, you hated it, email us UUP@betches.com. Yeah. And we're always trying to improve if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, please send them in. I mean, listen, a lot of what she said, I agree with. I just think, you know,
I think there's just like a little, there's very negative things about dating apps. You guys write in all the time. You have issues.
Well, yeah.
You feel like commodified. You feel like there's too many options. That's something we talk about a lot. But I also do think that there's a lot of positive things about dating apps that have come. I think that being single later in life is something that's just happening naturally. People are exploring and doing more and they're single for longer. And this really gives them an opportunity to meet people in non-traditional ways that they wouldn't have had before.
Listen, someone who is 30 and a guy or girl in any city doesn't have to rush into something because they're not sure if anyone will go out with them anymore.
Right. Yeah. There's like a ton of options.
There's options.
Right. Which can be a lot. I get it can be overwhelming and it can be bad for you, but in certain circumstances, it's better than it has been. Like I did give you that statistics. That is a true statistic that 60% of marriages worldwide are arranged.
Yeah.
So like I don't really think anyone wants to go back to that in America. Most of those I assume are not in this country.
No. Yes. That's a valid great point.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, Nancy Joe said this herself. This is a big topic and there's no binary here. It is gray and there's good and bad to everything.
Right.
And we also have to be better, you know, we have to be, I think to me, my argument always comes down to personal responsibility.
Right.
And being aware and knowing, listen, I know when I have 7 vodka sodas, that's not the smartest thing to do.
Right. Everyone's got to be responsible for themselves. I do think the dating app companies definitely should take some responsibility for, in the sense of like making sure things are safe on their app and making sure that people don't feel either like discriminated against or sexually harassed.
Of
That's
course.
Obviously very important. But
and
of course, like, we should
hateful,
all have our personal.
And people writing hateful things on these things, they should be taken out like they would be taken out of a park for yelling hateful things. We both agree with that.
Yes.
So, and also, these apps are changing and evolving. And here's the thing, we have to respect our power as followers and subscribers. We say rate, review, subscribe because there's a power in subscribing.
Right.
So you have to know when the product is not for you.
Yeah.
So if you're Tinder, you don't feel good about it,
get off.
Maybe it's a different app. Maybe it's IRL. It's in real life. So
exactly.
We just wanted to say that because we know that the tone of this show is supposed to be fun and commiseration. And that kind of went down a different road, but I enjoyed it. I'm happy she came.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I like hearing a different point of view sometimes.
Let's
do
an email.
Yeah. Okay.
UUP@betches.com. Send them in. Please let us know.
Let's do it.
Hi, J&J. I recently discovered your podcast. I'm already assessed. I'm planning to share on my Insta story soon.
Do it yesterday.
Oh, my God. So I literally feel like I'm in the Black Mirror episode where the AI device tells couples the exact day and time their relationship will end.
Have you seen it?
I don't know if I have.
You should watch Black Mirror.
I like Black Mirror.
There's one episode, I think the one she's referring to is I think it's the first or second episode of the new season where people are basically like, the dating app is essentially, they get paired with someone.
Yeah.
But like, it'll tell you like how long your relationship is going to end.
I'm kind of into that.
You should watch it. It was like,
I'd like to know.
It was a really good one.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Please help. So I've been dating this guy for almost 2 months now, and it's going great. We both just graduated college and both have great jobs, and we met through a mutual friend at a happy hour. He introduced me to all his friends. We have amazing sex, and I spend every night at his apartment, and I still feel like I can't get enough of him. We decided to be exclusive last weekend, and last night he asked me to be his girlfriend, so we made it official. Ooh, I'm so excited
for
them.
Very exciting.
So here's the problem. He's only in town, and she puts her town, for 2 months for his job training. At the end of the year, he moves back to we'll say Boston. We talked about if we should go into a relationship knowing that it won't be long distance in the near future, and we both decided to enjoy it while he's here and to figure it out, do what to do when the time comes. This is the thing is, I tried a long-distance relationship once before, and it completely ruined the relationship. I think this new guy would be better and more communicative than my ex was, but I still don't like the idea of a long distance. And we don't know if I would be happy if I couldn't see him every day, spend time with him like we do now. I also don't have the money to fly every weekend. Who does, bitch? And I'm starting grad school soon. Feel like the odds are against us, but I'm the happiest I've ever been. And I've been in a while, and I don't want to give up on us. Am I an idiot for continuing a relationship that we know will end soon? I know it's only going to hurt worse the more I get attached to him. Or will this work out if it's really quote-unquote meant to be? I can feel myself falling in love with this guy, and the idea of leaving him in 2 months is driving me insane. Please tell me what to do, or anything will be okay. What do you think?
I think this is a good question. It's a good dilemma. I think part of why it's so good is probably the knowledge that he's leaving.
Insecurity
is very hot, like in terms of like not knowing like how long this will last, and like
anyone can do like a vacation,
right? Yeah, this is like an extended vacation. Yeah. Like there, you're probably only seeing like the really good stuff. Mm-hmm. Not to say that it's bad. Maybe it is. You are really happy and it is going really well. I think I've never been. Have you been in a long distance relationship? I've never been in one.
The distance that there is longer than my. People judge the distance.
Right.
Any place that you have to travel more than an hour to is long distance to me.
Right.
So yes, New York to Boston. I did it.
Did you have issues?
Yeah. It's the problem is a lot what you're saying is this mm-hmm. kind of vacation life you're living together.
Right.
But I like the situation when she says the odds are against us. I don't think you can be like, listen, the odds are against you no matter what.
Right.
9 out of 10 people you meet don't happen. Don't and the 10th one ends out in divorce 50% of the time. So the odds are against you. That's why dating is so tough. If you've met someone that you're enjoying, and I do think like, the knowledge of the 2 months, like when that ends, okay, then you assess. I don't think dating can be really
planned out
right. in that way. Like you don't know if it's going to end in 2 weeks. Maybe 2 weeks later he'll go, you'll say, I don't really like being with this guy. It's not the bloom is off the rose. Let's move on.
Yeah, I could see that. I think she's probably like needs for her headspace. And I think a lot of the time, not saying all the time, a lot of the time for women, it's tougher to be like ambiguous about a relationship. You like to know where you stand. But you like to know where you're going. They're in a relationship. I think for the after to kind of be like, let's see what happens here is like a little, you wanted someone to be like all in or all out. And I get that feeling. But I do agree with you that in this case, it might be better to be like at the end of this 2 months when he leaves to be like, let's try it.
Yeah.
If it's becoming a lot for us, we'll know we gave it a shot and it's just not working. It doesn't have to be this dramatic fallout.
For sure.
We could just say we tried it. And if it doesn't, then it doesn't.
And it's kind of like that love conquers all type of like bullshit saying that kind of exists for this.
Yeah.
Where it's like, have a great 2 months. Like, let's concentrate on what you got. You got 2 months. And then when you get to the end of it, you'll say, I'm enjoying time with you. And he'll say, I'm enjoying time with you. If it goes as you think it will go.
Right.
And let's take out the calendar at that point. Let's take it out and let's start drawing up a plan. I think that's the only way it works.
Right. I agree. That makes you feel like, and also that gives you that sense of stability that you're like, okay, like we're not just going and like, let's see what happens. Let's see when I see you.
Yeah.
Like you're like, let's put an effort in. Let's try. And if it's a lot, if it's too much, it's too much.
My thing to them would be to take a very romantic thing and make it practical.
Right.
I think that will help them a lot.
So that you're not like clouded by.
Yeah. Like I know it's not sexy, but to say, hey, we're going to FaceTime every Wednesday. This is what I want. I'd like to FaceTime every Wednesday. And then on this date and this date, you're coming here. And on that date, I'm going there. How do you feel about that? And he'll go, perfect. I'm in. And then you can see how the relationship does with those things. And I'm not saying you have to travel every weekend, but let's make the effort to say, when will we be in the same town? Let's figure this out. And
when can we make it work?
And also to not be offended when someone can't make it work. Not being able to come down. She's in Raleigh and he's in Boston. Not being able to come down to Raleigh for a weekend doesn't mean that he doesn't want to see you ever. That's not the weekend it works. But if you plan for a month, a month from now, he's coming back down. Let's make it happen. All right.
I think it's also important, if you can, to sort of fill out your longer term plans. Because if you're this guy's moving to Boston, he's like, I'm going to be in Boston for the rest of my life. I'm finally moving home.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I don't have any plans to leave the city.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, it might be not be worth it to, if you're both kind of like open to like a lot of arrangements, and then eventually maybe he'll move back or you can move there. One of you is open to relocation eventually. That seems like a better idea. But if you're both, I think that it can be a little bit of a waste of time and sort of like a mental mind fuck if no one has any really intentions of changing their plans ever.
Someone has to compromise their life,
right?
As crazy as that. I mean, I have two separate friends where they're married now.
Okay.
And one of them took a step for the other one.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you have to do that
in both situations.
No one has kids with their long distance partner.
Yeah. Well, so one of you is going to say, I'm doing this. And one, it was the woman, and the other, it was the man. So it can be the man or the woman.
Right.
But you got to say, I'm going to take a step back from my goal involves this relationship. That's not to say that the other person's goal doesn't involve it, but you have to, at some point, just be like, someone's got to move.
Yeah.
Make a move. Right. Hey, I see myself in this career. Could I ever move? In your career, could you ever move? You're in training. They have training down here. Obviously, there's opportunities down here. Would you ever petition them in maybe 6 months to maybe get down here?
Right.
These are all good questions to ask.
I think long distance is fine if it has an end date or an end period.
Or a thought on
ending.
Or
a thought of an ending, right, of an end date, or a possibility of an end date. If you were just going long distance with no, and there's no possibility or potential to move it, then it's like, what's the point?
I was long distance with someone, and towards the end of it, she started saying things like, well, someone's got to make a move. You know,
someone's got to get the door. I don't know who's going to be.
No, you go first. Yeah. So, but I did, she was kind of saying that she was going to end up here.
Right.
And the closer we got to that reality, the more it didn't feel right. And
well, it's good to tell someone before they move. Yeah.
Yeah. We are not together now, but I think these things, when they're said out loud, I kind of think of it as like stand-up. I'll write things on paper all the time, and I'm like, that is the funniest fucking joke of all time. And then I'll say it out loud, and I'll go, oh, fucking shit. I can't believe I just heard myself say those words out of my mouth. That's definitely not happening. That's the least funny thing I've ever heard. I think with relationship stuff, that happens too.
Right.
Like hearing it or saying it, you're like, my mouth should never move in those directions ever again.
Right. You know? I think that's important.
But we can look positively at this situation. She's like, all the cards are against us. They're not all against you.
Yeah.
You can get $200 flights these days. You're good.
That's true. Yeah, you could sustain it and have a good time. I would give yourself if you want to try it, give yourself an amount of time after which you like, you reflect on how that's going.
Yeah. And just don't be afraid to say the hard things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know,
you can say
that's
like
life.
6 months in, like, is this working for me? Am I like, do I feel like happy with this arrangement?
Also, you train down here.
Yeah.
They must have jobs down here.
Yeah.
If
it's worth it. The thing about the long distance is it makes you think, is this person worth it? Whereas if the person lives here, you're like,
it's worth an Uber.
Yeah.
I could do a $15
Uber. If you like them, you got to like really like
them.
Yeah. There's no like, I'm kind of into this girl I'm seeing who lives across the country.
Yeah, yeah. You better be you fucking Jones.
If you're on TikTok like me, I'm sure you've seen people obsessing over Sol de Janeiro and their perfume mists. Sol de Janeiro's fragrances are inspired by cheirosa, a Portuguese word that means to smell incredibly delicious. Designed by master perfumers, their fragrances are unique and complex. They incorporate high-quality floral, amber, and wood notes with gourmand undertones for a completely immersive fragrance experience. And believe me, they are worth the hype. Cheirosa 62 Perfume Mist, this scent brings the warm feeling of summer to no matter the season, with silky vanilla, subtle florals, and creamy sandalwood for a beachy vibe anytime. It brightens your day. And you got to use the products at night. Go out, get your sexy on, get dressed up. I love these mists. And if you've been wanting to try these viral products yourself, there's never been a better time. Right now, Sol de Janeiro is offering listeners 10% off on their first order on soldejaneiro.com and free shipping with code UUP10. That's soldejaneiro.com. Promo code UUP10. Soldejaneiro.com. Promo code UUP10. 10.
All right, let's...
UUP at Betches.com. Should we play one game and then get out of here?
Yeah, let's do it.
UUP at Betches.com. They refuse to pay for Spotify Premium without ads. This is such a... I know a woman wrote this in.
She did.
Because...
Do you have Spotify Premium?
Women love Spotify.
You don't like Spotify?
I'm just saying.
Do you have... Jared, do you have Spotify Premium?
It's on my phone. I don't have the premium.
You don't have ads.
But women...
You do have ads.
I don't use Spotify. I'm not... I'm a Pandora user.
You don't listen to music.
I use Pandora if I listen to music.
Do you pay for Pandora?
People are horrified by that fact.
Wow.
They treat me... When I say I use Pandora...
Do you have an Android too?
Yeah, they treat me as if I'm 800 years old.
Wow.
As if I said the crazy... As if I was like, oh, let me take out my flip phone.
That might be the hipsteriest thing about you.
Is that I'm a Pandora user?
Is that your Pandora user, yeah.
Because I didn't have... Someone sent me a Spotify playlist. I didn't know how to do it. And they were like,
wow.
You are 100 years old.
Yeah.
Not a Spotify guy. But we're trying to get this podcast on Spotify to the listeners here. For those who are, we are trying. It's going to happen at some point.
This isn't a Spotify ad,
This isn't an ad.
Even though Jared, we know he's like kind of a loser.
I'm a loser who doesn't use it. Are you paying for the premium?
I am paying for the premium. I don't think I would care that much about a guy who wasn't.
There are some girls.
Unless he like wouldn't pay because he was like, it's too expensive.
I pay for Pandora Premium.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
You're paying for a premium streaming service.
Yeah.
so pretentious.
That is not to me. It is like not even on the spectrum of red flag deal breaker.
Okay, I could see a world in which I'd be like a lot. I think if he was like, oh, I don't. If he just used Spotify
with ads,
and he was just like, yeah, the ads are fine. Like I don't mind them. Like
just wait for this Hulu ad.
Here's the middle of our sex
romantic
playlist. Yeah.
That's like, happened to me. I've been in bed with girls where I'm paying. Like I have the regular Pandora, and
it's like,
do you want to hear about Hulu?
That should make you lose an erection.
I'm like, hold on.
Yeah.
Hold on. This makes me harder. You
know? It's the sound of savings.
Sure. Yeah. Right. Let's do, go for it.
Okay. My friend met a guy on Hinge. He FaceTimed her before they even met. P.S. They don't live in the same city. Red flag or deal breaker?
They met on Hinge before they, oh, they FaceTimed before.
If they live in a different city.
Deal breaker.
Either way?
No, because I get emails about this a lot from women. It never ends well.
The FaceTime?
No. Met a guy on Hinge. He FaceTimed before they even met. P.S. They don't live in the same city.
Oh, you mean
city.
Them not living in the same city as
if you meet someone on a dating app.
That wasn't the red flag. The red flag or deal breaker was the FaceTiming, but let's do
No. The red flag deal breaker is that they don't live in the same city and they met on an
app. She said, P.S. They don't live in the same
city.
Well,
P.S. I don't give a shit about their postscript.
Okay.
I'm telling her what matters. And every time you meet someone on an app that isn't living in your city,
right,
it's either cheating. It's always cheating.
They're on vacation.
Vacation. Yeah. It's never going to be like... And then the FaceTiming makes it even worse to me because he's trying to show you, look at, trust me, you can see my face.
Right.
He wants quick trust.
My brother met a girl on some app. They were not in the same city.
Mm-hmm.
He was living in San Francisco. He moved to, they did long distance,
mm-hmm.
and then he moved in with her when he moved to Boston. They lived with her. Immediately wanted to get out. It was immediate.
He moved.
It was immediate. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna say
they
got married.
Each other a few times. Yeah. No. He moved to Boston to like be with her. And
I think long distance
immediately
only,
ended.
Yeah. Long distance only works when you start in the same city.
Yeah.
Like you have to have
some relationship in the city together.
You have to start with seeing someone. Go to work from your bed or from their
right.
bed.
Otherwise, it's like you're too hyped up on the like adrenaline of seeing the person. You have to like know them on a daily basis.
I get these emails. I hope we read on a future episode because there's this email that I keep thinking of, and I gotta tell you to find it because I gotta tell you to find it. It sounded awful. Now I'm really in my PC mode with the Nancy Joe. This people meeting on apps and they're like, he was in town and then we met on the app and he keeps coming back every weekend. Then one weekend he doesn't want to come back. And it's like,
because he's with his girlfriend.
His girlfriend. Because she told him, why do you keep going away? You don't work every weekend. This is where the apps are, you know, deceitful. You know,
right.
like, and it's like, listen, just because you have the ability to do something doesn't mean you should do something. Just because someone was nice on a dating app from 2 hours away doesn't mean that's the only person we'll ever be nice to. There's nice people in every town.
Yeah, and I think that's the rut people get stuck in, is they're like, if this doesn't work, I'll never love again.
They become too, you know, it's it's too, what is it called? They're just
in their own head.
I don't know.
All right. Well, last one. He's on the BuzzFeed hottest mugshot list. P.S. He's no longer incarcerated.
Oh, P.S. This is P.S. Matters,
P.S.
too.
P.S. Nation.
Marry him. No. Deal breaker.
You meet a girl. You Google her. She's hottest. On the BuzzFeed hottest mugshot list. Yeah, she's hot. Yeah, I think you'd go out with her.
One date.
Okay, she's not going to be your wife.
One date, not my wife, but you know.
Look at this picture of mommy on the internet.
Yeah. Listen, she taught high school.
She's not the hot, not dating the hot convict. The hot convict has like that heiress, Top Shop heiress girlfriend. You know the hot convict?
I remember the hot convict was like a thing.
Yeah, so he like got out of prison, he got like all this fame, divorced his wife. Now he has a baby with the heiress of Top Shop, and he just he just roams around on like
the
yachts.
The heiress of Top Shop?
Yes, he just roams. He like is on yachts all the time with this woman, just like.
This is one of those self-responsibility things that I'm talking about.
It's a hottest mugshot like, love story.
You willingly went in.
Yeah.
To, you know, are you going to blame
the
internet?
Why she went in?
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
Oh my.
Anyway, that's our show.
That's our episode. Let us know what you thought. I think this was a worthwhile conversation. It's a different tone than what we usually do. You might have turned it off already. You might have kept going.
We hope you came back.
We hope you came back. We're here every Wednesday. Keep telling your friends.
Betches.